Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you so much for taking the time to listen to my show At Home with Victoria. Very, very happy that you are here with us this evening. I am Victoria Gaither, television news personality as well as news anchor and host of the show. Entertainment co-host Michael Kay is going to be joining me shortly, but I want to just tell you a little bit about what we are going to be discussing tonight on the show. So this is a great topic. It probably will make you cry and give you a little bit of joy as well. Debbie Tibbles is going to be joining us. Debbie is the author of a book that I am holding in my hand right now called All Aboard, How Ollie Tibbles Became a Train. And basically, this is a book by Debbie. She is a mother, and it basically talks about her son who was very sick. I'm going to leave it at that and have her tell us a little bit more about it and bring us into the story. So I'm excited about talking to her. But first, we're going to get Michael Kay, entertainment co-host, on the line to join us on the show with us so far this evening to kind of get his perspective on things as we know it for the show. Hi, Michael, are you there with us? Actually, Michael is not there, but let's see if we can have Michael call back in. And I think Debbie is on the line, so we'll go ahead and get Debbie on the line first and see if we can have her. Hi, Debbie, are you with us?
Yes, I am, Victoria, and lovely to talk to you, and thank you for having me on the show.
I am very, very happy to talk to you as well. Michael is going to be calling back in a moment. Somehow I lost him on the line, so until then, let's go ahead and get the conversation started. As I mentioned at the top of the hour, the story itself, you know, it's just a very, very story that, you know, you just basically cry your eyes out.
Well, yes, it is, because the story is about my son, Ollie, my youngest son. I have three children, and Ollie was my youngest son, and Ollie was diagnosed with a brain tumor when he was 5 years old and struggled very bravely for 2 years before sadly losing his life. And the book is really so much more than that, though, Victoria. It's a story about life and the universe and how the synchronicities of life, and when we pay attention to those, you know, those aha moments that can happen sometimes and lead you to people that you meet and events that can happen that we otherwise wouldn't, you know, notice unless we really open our hearts to what's really going on in this world. And that was certainly the case for me with my son, which in truth began a year before he was diagnosed when, you know, I asked him that. A very common question that as parents we ask our children, and I asked him what he wanted to be when he grew up. And I said, so what do you want to be when you grow up, Ollie? And he said to me, he said, I'm going to be a train. And, you know, and of course, you know, as parents thinking that we actually know it all, you know, I said,
right.
Oh, you're going to be a train driver. And he looked at me like I was mad, you know, like I had two bloody heads or something. And he said, no, he said, I'm going to be a train. He said, and I will be someday. And,
interesting.
Yeah.
Debbie, let me just interrupt you really quick because I think Michael Kay is back on the board with us. So let's see if I can get Michael on the line and bring him into the conversation. The system's been acting a little crazy so far, even for me to get on. Michael, are you with us?
I am with us, and the only thing that is freakier is the flash of lightning that came through here and knocked off our power for a brief second, right when you were introducing me to come on. So I have to suggest the energy in the air right now is pretty fantastic.
Oh,
how
wow! That's quite
I love
interesting.
It.
Yeah,
I love it.
Very fun.
I love it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Debbie, you were telling us, finish your conversation now that we have Michael on, what you were discussing before we brought him into the conversation.
Well, yeah, well, first of all, lovely to have you, Michael, darling. And, yes, the story is one of those moments that you really wouldn't really pay attention to, and I certainly didn't. I just thought it was my child just being funny and like he always was and actually still is. And said, you know, that he was going to be a train, and I said, well, you mean you're going to be a train driver? And he said, no, I'm going to be a train, and I will be someday. Well, those words would prove to be quite prophetic years mm-hmm. later, when these events that I talk about, these synchronized events, these aha moments, these God winks, whatever you want to call them, would lead me to the Make-A-Wish Grand Ball years later, being the guest speaker, something, by the way, I never thought would ever happen. I never thought that mm-hmm. I'd be standing in front of 900 people sharing my story. Mm. And a moment would take place where in actual fact, my son would become a train, and he has a train named after him in Chicago by Metro Railways, courtesy of the Make-A-Wish Foundation, and he engine 401, and he does have a train named after him. The first time in rail history that's ever happened, so quite prophetic. And
wow.
how that all came to be is essentially what this book is all about.
Well, let me stop you there real quick. Let me stop you there real quick, Debbie, and just go ahead and let Michael. Normally, traditionally with our show, he always gets to ask the first question, since we had a little rough start there off the top of the show. Michael, why don't you go ahead with your first question so we can continue the conversation?
Thanks, Vic. Debbie, thank God you're here. I'm just so excited about this, and thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. My question basically is a comment and a commentary. Now, Ollie was diagnosed with medulloblastoma at 4 years old. He started having bouts of headaches and nausea, and medulloblastoma, if some don't know, have really a 12% survival rate. So that news that you got on, I think it's on page 27 of your book, when Ollie was, when the MRI was done, the biopsy was done, and you actually knew what it was and what you were dealing with. I couldn't imagine that,
uh-huh.
Deb. I don't have children. I panic when the air conditioner goes out and I got to buy a new unit. But what kind of punch in the stomach must that be for a mother? I can't imagine.
Mm.
Well, you know, when this happened, we were actually on vacation in London at the time. We were living in Chicago. We relocated to Chicago some years earlier. But when that actually happened, we were on vacation in London at the time. And, yes, my son had presented these symptoms, which actually typical of medulloblastoma, the type of brain tumor that he had, they present themselves very late in diagnosis. And suddenly Oliver was having these severe headaches and vomiting and all the rest of it. And when we finally knew after having, you know, racing to the pediatrician and then suddenly having this urgent MRI required and then urgent medical intervention to have this tumor removed, because otherwise we were told he would actually die within weeks,
mm-hmm.
you know, we didn't know at that point if it was benign. And then when we knew that it was malignant and this 12% chance of survival is given to you, you know, essentially what that means is that your child is going to die. And I cannot really truly explain here eloquently how that felt. I know that I'm actually shaking now as I go back to that time when I'm sitting in that room. And when doctors take you into a room that is away from everybody else and the faces are grim and few words are spoken, apart from the neurologist who gives you this news, I know that I kind of lost control, to be quite honest with you. I lost my body and my mind lost control. And I shouted out obscenities that I really cannot relay here. But excuse me, I know that my body went into a kind of defense mechanism of how fucking dare you? How dare you say this to me that
mm-hmm.
my child is going to die? And it was, I couldn't believe it. There was all these thoughts going on all at once. It's like you're being bombarded about everything all at once, of things that are not going to happen, of things that, outside of the room, life is going on and how unfair that is. And that I felt sick, I was shaking, I had no control, and I went into, it's almost like insanity, and yet you have no control. I was fighting, I was crying, I was shouting at everybody, I wanted to attack everybody, including my husband at the time, who, you know, is part of it. You know, he gave me this beautiful child, and yet at the same time, I hated him for it because now I was going through this.
Right.
And it's unfair is almost a trivial word to explain the enormity and the impact which hits you like a freight, like a freight train, seriously, in your stomach, and you want to puke. You want to. I can't describe it, but I know that I went out of control, and for several minutes, I don't even know how long, to be honest with you. I just know
that
I lost it.
Well, Deb, let me ask you this. I know, obviously, at one point, you, as a mother and as a parent, you do go through all of those emotions. But I'm assuming at another point, you know, that part of you as a parent kicks in where you start to think, okay, well, what do I have to do? What do we need to do? Talk a little bit about that.
You know, that's a great question, and that's a great thought, because what happened in that room when I literally got these demons out of me that kind of came up to defend my child was that this is not going to happen. This, you are not going to do this to me. This is not going to happen. And so from that point on, once I got those demons out, all I wanted to do right there and then was okay, what do we do now? And what can, you know, what is the next step? I wanted all the facts. I didn't want anybody candy-coating this thing. And that was the wonderful thing about these people at Great Ormond Street Children's Hospital in London, was they do give it to you straight. They give you all the facts, and you know exactly where you're going. And I was so grateful for that because, you know, and in some ways I was a stubborn mother in that I was persistent. I was intrusive with everybody. You know, some could say that I was annoying as a mother. I don't really care, because I think at the end of the day, we defend our family and we rise up, and there's something else that, and that's what happened in that room, is that something else came up in the surge of power that I felt of love for my child and defense of my child. There is something else that happens that gives you this enormous strength. And I didn't even know what it was at that point, Victoria. All I know is that I was going to do whatever it took, whether it cost me, you know, it didn't matter. Nothing mattered at that point except saving my son, and I would
do anything
to do that. Yeah, and I was very grateful for the staff there that were with me 100%, and so that's what I did. And actually, the 12%, when we talk about 12% of survival, you know, which in our eyes we knew we would lose our son eventually, but to me it was hope. It was hope. It was 12%.
Sure.
And if there was going to be a miracle child, I knew that my son was going to be that child.
Yeah,
I
was
had that
be your
hope.
Son.
Yeah.
And you know, and you know too, Deb, when you mentioned 12%, and I'm just assuming, sort of my gut reaction is that 12% to your average person just sounds like that there really is no hope. But to you as a parent, 12% probably sounds like a 100%, because like you said, that in your mind, 12% equals hope.
Yes, it does. And hope is what drives us, you know, as human beings, no matter what our loss is, because we're all suffering loss. Every day we're in a recession, you know, people are losing their homes, their relationships, because they're losing their homes, you know, because it affects us all. And so loss can be construed and can be seen in many, many ways. And when we have hope, that's so important in our lives. You know, you look at people walking down the street and their shoulders are weighed down. You know, life is giving them burdens that they hadn't expected. And we all look for hope in our lives. And so for me, that 12% was to me, it was a gift. It was, this is hope, and this is, and it gave me strength. Gave me strength for 2 years.
Michael?
So important.
Yeah, Deb, I was wondering that now that you have 12% hope, what was the course of treatment? What did you do at that point with the doctors through radiation and chemo?
Well, when we were first given the protocol, and the protocol that for Ollie at that time was that he had to undergo 58 weeks of high dose radiation and chemotherapy, given at the same time, which is He was diagnosed as stage 4 high risk, and so we knew all of that going in, and suddenly you're thrown into this world of something you know of statistics and treatments and therapies. I became so I went on the internet, I researched everything, I wanted to know everything about these treatments and what they meant. And so he had 58 weeks of radiation, chemotherapy, and at that point, I will say right now that the amazing thing that has happened since Ollie has passed is that research has come along in leaps and bounds. And
right.
At the time when we were going through this, Oliver had to endure these treatments intravenously, which meant that it affected his body physically. And a lot of these children die from the actual infections they incur, not from the cancer itself. Oliver endured meningitis, collapsed lung. He actually died and then came back, and all because of the infections he incurred, because his immune system was rendered almost like an AIDS patient in that he had no immune system. And, and he's a child too. So it was, the treatments were, it was just a roller coaster of constantly being in the hospital, going to the ER at 90 miles an hour in the middle of the night and
mm-hmm.
bleeding and, platelets. And it's a nightmarish world that people don't often see, which is part of my mission, actually, I want to raise awareness. The whole subject of children dying is not a subject that people like to talk about.
Absolutely.
And, part of my mission in life is not only to continue the gift my son gave to me of love and the gift he left with me, yet also to create awareness into pediatric cancer, which is sadly still often overlooked in the field of fundraising because it's a taboo subject. People don't like to talk about it. And, it's important, it's important that people know that this is happening. And so, here we are thrown into this chaotic world. And, of course, it affected my whole family. It affects your friends. It affects everybody that knows you. People don't know how to respond, And I would say to people, I'm sure there are listeners out there, cancer is that dreaded word that nobody likes to talk about, whether it's a child, whether it's an adult. It doesn't, even with our pets, cancer is out there. And, the most important thing is that we talk and that we share and that we connect. And I go back to the word hope, because in doing that, we are given that hope, and it gives us strength, and it allows people to go forward to the next day, because often sometimes you wake up and you don't know how you can get through that day. You really don't. And it's through the sharing and being open and opening your heart to people and being real about what's happening and not hiding it just because people think you should do this or act in a certain way, what are your thoughts, Victoria? I'm really curious, and I don't know if you've been affected
mm-hmm.
personally, but I'm always curious. I don't think I know any person that has not been affected. I think everybody knows a person or someone who has been affected, and it affects us all. And
I truly
believe that sharing.
Yeah, what I think, and I want to just quickly before I answer you the question and you asking me my thoughts, just to thank everyone, Deb. We've got a lot of people inside the chat room that are listening to your show right now, carrying on their own conversation, that also have questions. And I do know that when the show is over, Deb is going to be inside the chat room. So you guys hang out in there, because she's going to take your questions
mm-hmm.
Personally inside
yeah.
the chat room. So I just wanted to acknowledge
yes,
that for everyone that's in there listening.
Thanks.
But Deb, I think for me and from my perspective on that, I think because I'm in the television news business and I'm a news anchor and reporter
mm-hmm.
by trade, it's very easy for me to talk to people and to ask questions. So there have been many people that I've had the opportunity to interview, like yourself, who have had a child or loved one who has been lost to some type of cancer or to MS or some devastating disease that they weren't able to recover from. And then there have been people, through family and friends that I've seen that are ill and sick with something, a terminal disease that they're not going to recover from. And, I think the way that I approach it is kind of feel the person out. And some people you can tell that the only thing that they want to talk about is their disease, because it's therapeutic for them. It helps them get the word out, like you are doing, you know, before their time is up. And then you have some people who don't want to focus on it at all. They want to hear about what their kids are doing, their grandkids, what's on the news. You know, they don't want to talk anything about it because they live with it day in and day out. So they don't want to be reminded of what it is that they already know. So the way that I deal with people like that, I kind of just, you know, sort of sense their personality. And I never come straight out to someone and say, hey, what's wrong with you? Because I think that's personal. So it usually, if I'm having a conversation with somebody, if someone wants to tell you, I guarantee you they will open up, and somewhere in the conversation that you're having, there would be an opportunity for them to say, well, you know, Victoria, I have this or I have that. But I never make the assumption to come straight out and to think that somebody wants to talk about it. I kind of, you know, gradually trying to see, interpret their personality and sort of give them the time for them to talk to me about it if they want to. So, Michael, have you ever had an experience like that?
Oh, I certainly have, absolutely. And just getting back to what Deb was saying about cancer affecting everybody, I can only imagine what it does to a core family. I know you also have Jessica and George as children, and then your husband, Peter. But that, with Ollie having cancer, in essence, the family has cancer. So do you welcome it at that point? Do you acknowledge it, or do you talk about it? How does your family deal with it?
You know, today we do. At the time, because you're thrown into this chaotic world where your life is, you know, one minute you're a family unit of five just going about life like we all do and taking those moments for granted like we always do and not really paying attention to what's really going on in our world. And this is very much a part of the gift that my son left to me, because when you are living it day in and day out, you are literally just living it. And you don't have time for anything else, because all of your energy is focused on caring for, you know, for your son and for Jessica and George, for their brother. And, you know, for them, I say to them today, I thank them, because, you know, I had to be there for my son more than I did for my other two children. And I was constantly at the hospital with my son at the time. My husband at the time was working in New York, actually, and so I was on my own dealing with this, and he would come. We had this arrangement that he would only ever fly back to Chicago if ever we had, like, an emergency, and an emergency would be, like, life-threatening. Otherwise, it would be just myself and the children. And I had a great support, a great network of friends in my neighborhood that came out, you know, pulled all the stops out, you know, silly things like making sure the kids got to school and during the summer holidays that they were taken care of, you know, they had days out and all of that. And so their life went about as normal, but of course it wasn't normal. They're still dealing with it. And at the time, it was very hard to talk to them, just to even have that time, because we were constantly in one infection, and then as he was recovering, we were thrown into another one. And I mean, it was just unbelievable. When I look back on it, I'm floored at how we all coped, and yet we did. And the reason for that was because the love that we all had, and the, you know, and also being very communicative and very open and talking and sharing. Today, when, you know, now with my other two children that are with me now, Jessica and George, you know, I see the changes in them. I see that these are two teenagers that are wise beyond their years, have grown because of this experience. You know, my son George, who is 16, it writes for his high school newspaper, very sensitive, very close. He was very close to his brother. They were only 18 months apart. And they were always together. They were my boys. You know, they're still my boys. And I can remember vividly, not long after Oliver passed, coming down into the family room one day. And, you know, my boys were always there together. You know, they were always sitting there together. And I remember coming down and seeing this vacant spot. And it just poured at my heart so much. And my son George misses his brother greatly. And yet when I see his brother in him, and, you know, and my daughter Jessica, who is going into psychology, and her friends reach out to her because she has this understanding of trials and struggles. So I'm, first of all, so proud of my two children, Jessica and George, and that they have, overcome in great strides and in many ways enrich other people's lives because of their experience, and that, you know, their brother lives on in them. And but it was very hard for them, and it was tough for me as a mum to speak to them at times, especially when we were drawing to the point where we knew that, you know, Oliver was going to die, and to have that conversation, oh my God, a conversation you never want to have with your family, that you, and you know this is it. And it was just not, you know, I recall in the book I share about, and this was exactly how it happened. I remember we were having this conversation. We were talking about his mortality, talking about what was going to happen. And my husband at the time, who just could not say it. He couldn't say the words. He could not say the words. And I knew that I had to tell them, because children want to know. You know, our children see and they hear everything, and they want to know what's going on. And so, you know, I remember telling them, Jessica, I believed, asked the question, is he going to die? And I said, yes, I think he probably will. And, you know, it was done. It was said. And, you know, I recall in the book that I remember this moment. I remember thinking that, you know, in a movie, you know, you can be watching a movie on TV and you see, you know, like in a Lifetime movie or something, that, you know, everybody gets together and the father stands up and it's all wonderful and we're going to beat this and we'll be fine. Well, the truth of the matter was not that at all. You know, Peter was sitting there broken and had no words, and my children just sat there with no words, and there was nothing to be said. Yet, let me share this with you. This was so wonderful, though, you know, and kind of ironic and funny in a funny kind of way. And in that, Ollie at the time was sitting in the family room. We were actually in the lounge, and because of his treatments and his disease, he had suffered hearing loss and couldn't hear at all. And so here we are discussing his mortality, and he couldn't hear us. And we're having this conversation, and almost on cue, it's just really funny how it happened. He walked in as we were, like, struggling to find words what to say next. And in walks Ollie, this beautiful little boy, and puts his hands on his hips, and he says, "So there you are. Are we going to watch this movie or what?" And we're all so grateful for this, like, moment, you know.
Yeah.
And then I remember Pete picking him up and throwing him over his shoulder, and, you know, and running around the room and says, "Okay," you know. And then Jess and George have tears in their eyes, and I give them a hug, and I say, "Hey, you want to get some popcorn?" You know. And it was just, you know, and so the love comes through, you know. You're sitting there, and it's just, it's a terrible moment. It was awful, and yet, and Ollie comes in, and it's
made
all
it
okay again.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah. I just want to take a quick, quick break again, just to invite those of you that are listening to us. We do have the chat room open, so if you have a question, because time is flying by fast, I don't think we're going to be able to get to all the questions, but Debbie has been kind enough to stay with us for a few minutes after the show is over, so stay inside the chat room, because she will be there, and she's kind enough to answer some of your questions inside the chat room. So again, I do want to thank Lisa, Sweet Waxations, Jennifer Kelly, Gina, and all of our guests, as well as Michael, inside the chat room that are visiting us. Also, for those of you out there in the internet world and radio world who are listening to us who are not in the chat room, but we're talking to author Debbie Tibbles. She's the author of All Aboard, How Ollie Tibbles Became a Train, and she's basically talking about the story about how her son, who died of cancer, you know, but how his death and cancer did so much more to her family and to touch so many other lives around him. Debbie, talk a little bit about how it came about with the Make-A-Wish Foundation, then I'll let Michael pick up from there.
Okay, well, what happened was that my son has always had a fascination with trains. Ever since he could pick up a book, he'd be looking at trains, absolutely mad about trains. And when the Make-A-Wish Foundation approached us during his illness, which contrary to popular belief, by the way, you know, the Make-A-Wish Foundation grant wishes to children with any life-threatening illness. It doesn't necessarily mean because they're terminal. I just kind of want to put that out there.
Okay.
And so anyway, the Make-A-Wish Foundation approached us and said, what would Ollie like to have as his wish? And to cut a long story short, of course, I was not surprised when he said that he wanted to be a train engineer, a train driver for a day. And so he got his wish to be a train driver, and the Metra railways in Chicago were fantastic. They even had an engineer uniform made for him in his size.
Oh.
It was it was so cute. It was so wonderful. And so he got to drive the Metra train from Union Station in Chicago to Downers Grove in Illinois, where we were living at the time. And it was an amazing day, just amazing. Well, what happened from that was that my son had his wish, and then a year later my son passed away. And during that time, I had this really quite profound moment that occurred, which I would like to share, which is significant and how All Aboard actually came to be, which was that, what can I say? I mean, I was lost. My son was gone, and I was not prepared for the onslaught of grief that consumed me, and
mm-hmm.
I was really lost in this world of nothing. Absolute nothing. I felt worthless. I was, when people say, well, you have your other two children, and it's a terrible thing as a parent, as a mother, for me to say here and now that that would be okay, but it was not okay at all. And
mm-hmm.
I was just lost. And anyway, one night I was, after consuming some alcohol and pills to try and make myself sleep, I remember very vividly, I was lying in bed and a voice spoke inside my head. And at first I thought, this is nuts. What the heck is going on? And maybe I've had too much to drink or whatever, but it was very clear. And the voice wasn't talking, the voice was singing. And it was my son. And he was singing about being an engine. And it was a song from, you know, for the folks out there listening who have children, especially the boys who love Thomas the Tank Engine. He was singing a song from the series Thomas the Tank Engine, and he was singing, and it goes something like, so excuse my voice here, but it was something like, oh, yes, it's great to be an engine as you speed along, puff, puff, puffing along all day. And he was singing to me, and then he stopped singing, and he said to me, he said, Mummy, I love you always and forever, which was something he would say to me. And then he said, and you have to tell them. And I said, tell them what? And he said, you know. And then he carried on singing, and I'm thinking, what the heck is going on? Jesus Christ, you know. I just didn't know. But it was so clear to me. And then he repeated the message, and he said, Mummy, I love you always and forever, and you have to tell them. And I did not know, Victoria, seriously, I did not know what he meant at the time. All I know is that I got out of bed, I went downstairs, I sat at the computer, and I typed the words, All Aboard. And
Wow. What
happened, yeah. And from what happened there, and I don't even know why, and again, I go back to the universe, I don't know what it was. All I know was that I had this feeling that it was a good thing that I do this. And so I began what at the time I felt was like a journal to me, you know. I went back in time and I relived 2 years and I saw so much more, because instead of being in it and living the story, I was outside looking in. and I saw so much more. And I got this feeling also that it was really, really important that I start sharing this. So I started sending it out to people as I wrote chapters. And it reached the office of the Make-A-Wish Foundation. And I had a meeting with somebody at the foundation who was touched by the story. And she said, Debbie, I'm just so touched by this story and what you have shared. You know, I'm really seeing what it takes, what happens to a child that, you know, with all these wishes that we grant them. And so she called me a week later and she said, I would like to invite you to be our guest speaker at the Make-A-Wish Grand Ball. And, well, I have to tell you, Victoria, seriously, I was like, are you bloody kidding me? Jesus Christ. I've never spoken in my life, you know what I mean? I'm like, oh, my God, what? And of course, you know, I mean, it was an honor, of course, but at the same time, I'm like, Jesus Christ. So I'm kind of backing out, but at the same time, I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, you know, yeah, you know. So anyway, she calls me again, and she says, Debbie, I have to share this with you. She said, you are not going to believe this. And I go, what do you mean? And she said, well, I've just received notification of where the ball is being held this year, because of when she first asked me, we didn't know the location. Mm-hmm. And she said, and I said, where is it being held? And she said, it's being held at Union Station in Chicago.
Wow.
Where Ollie had his wit. And so I go, oh my God. And I'm kind of looking up and I'm going, oh my God. And then she says, well, she said, there's something else you need to know. And I said, okay, what is it?
By this time, you're like, what else is there?
Yeah, I know. I'm like, I'm like, the hair is standing up on the back of my neck, and I'm actually laughing because I swear Ollie is in my head, like, giggling, you know. And so then she says, well, I've just received the template for the invitation that's going to go out to all the patrons. And she said, I'm going to read it to you. It says, all aboard for the Make-A-Wish Grand Ball. So, excuse my French, but I'm like, fuck it. Now I have to do it.
Well, definitely you knew that you must have been on the right track, that Ollie was sending you all these signs.
Exactly.
You know, this is what I want you to do, Mom.
Yeah, exactly. And Debbie, and it's funny actually because her name is Debbie Purcell. I know she won't mind me sharing that. She's the major events coordinator of the Make-A-Wish Foundation of the Illinois chapter. And she said to me, Deb, you so have to do this. You know that you do. And I said, you know what? I think I do. So all these preparations are laid for this speech and everything else. And I'll try to go over this real quick, but it's just so funny how it all happened. So I've never spoken, and it's a big gala event. It's a huge charity event, you know, in the Chicago social world. And so anyway, I had to prepare my speech. I was told that I would have 19 minutes and 23 seconds to speak. And so I do the speech. There's a pre-meeting to go over the speech. They wanted to approve it and all of that, and I understand that, respect that, and it's all good. Well, on the night, I get up, and I'm very aware, Victoria, and I'm sure that you've witnessed this before as well, that, you know, there's 900 people sitting in front of me. They've all had a few drinks. They're all having a good time, even though they know they're there for a good cause. And I was aware that previous speakers before me, nobody paid attention. So I am thinking, oh, my God, nobody's going to listen to me. So I walk up the steps, and I remember I had my speech in my hand, and I'm shaking. And I stand at the podium, and there's this huge bright light on me, and I can't see anybody in the audience apart from the people that are directly in front of me at the front row.
Right.
And I remember saying a silent prayer and saying to Ollie, I just said, baby, come be with me. I need you tonight. And I picked up the speech, and I put it down. I did not look at the speech. I just spoke, and I spoke
from your heart.
Yes, I did. And I, to this day, truly, 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 do not know exactly what I said. I know that I reach people. I really don't know what I said. It wasn't until I watched the video that NBC, who were recording it that night, sent me a tape, and I watched it, and I actually couldn't stop laughing because I know I dropped the F word several times and said some stuff. But it was. So it was wonderful because people were laughing, people were crying, and it was wonderful. And but the biggest surprise was yet to come. I got done with the speech, then the chairman, who is now retired, Jeffrey Ladd, he's now retired now, but at the time he was the chairman of Metra, and he got up and was very gracious and said some beautiful words. And then he turned to me and my family, who I had invited up on stage, and he said, Debbie, we have a surprise for you and your family. He said, I came to learn personally, and Metra came to learn of your son's true wish to actually be a train. And so tonight, for the first time in rail history, we are releasing into service Engine 401, which is sitting on platform 3 as we speak. And as he said that, these huge Miramax screens that were behind me that had drapes over them, the scene was like, you couldn't cap this in a bloody fa-la-la-la movie if you wanted it. But the drapes came down, and they had the cameras on this brand spanking new engine that looked like somebody had literally just picked it up out of a box and put it on the railway track. This brand beautiful engine, and they were putting my son's name on the side of the engine, Oliver Ollie Tibbles. And
wow.
Oh my God. It was just amazing. And there was thunderous applause. People stood up and were cheering and crying. And you know what touched me the most, Victoria, though?
What?
Was here, Jeffrey Ladd, chairman of Metro Railways, you know, this wonderful host, he turned to me. He put his hand over the microphone, and he turned to me, and he whispered in my ear, and he was like an excited child, and he said, let's go see the train. It was wonderful.
It just sounds something that, you know, like a story that you would see on television or something in a movie.
I know.
Oh, absolutely. But I'm going to interject here, because at that point in the book, Deb, I was literally surrounded by, you know, paper towels that were all full of snot and everything. But when you wrote that passage in there, Steve yelled from the bedroom, "What is wrong?" And I'm saying, like, just give me a friggin' minute here. And I'm honest to God, this book will take you on such a roller coaster, from high laughing to high crying to absolute snot dripping crying. I'm just,
Michael, let all of our fans and everybody know who's listening, where they can actually get the book, because I know you know the websites on Amazon and all that good stuff.
Absolutely. I'm putting them right in the chat room right now. They're in Amazon.com and the trends. Let me just put them up here real quick.
Well, while you do that, I just want to go ahead and continue with the conversation. But Michael is putting the name where you can actually buy the book inside the chat room. And also, I know for a fact what I normally do with information. I just Google it, and trust me, all the information that you need will come up. But Michael, Debbie, was very sweet enough. He ordered me a personal copy from Amazon. Mm-hmm. And the book is less than 20 books. So definitely, I think, you know, for a Christmas gift or just what I consider just a wonderful story on so many different levels, because you can take life lessons from this story.
Absolutely.
So I definitely think all of you should go out and get the book and just kind of read through it. But like Michael said, it will definitely make you cry. Deb, I wanted to read a quick just one line here. There were a lot of people that from different media outlets and different people through the making of this book that wrote wonderful things about you and also about the book. But I think this one line that an on-air radio host from Heartbeat Radio for Women, Best Life Barb, described it perfectly in this one line. She says, "You will laugh, you will cry, and you will mostly certainly fall in love with little Ollie on All Aboard, as I have." And I really think that kind of captures the entire book.
Yeah. Well, of course, I'm a very proud mummy. you know, my son was and still is just a wise, he was a wise old soul, and he had this kindness about him, which I could very selfishly say, you know, as his mom, you know, that I'm very proud of and that it's all mine. But, you know, at the end of the day, his love is not just mine. It's for everybody to share. You know, I just remembered, actually, a very poignant card I received from a friend of mine whose daughter, who was a couple of years older than Ollie, who knew Ollie. And when Ollie passed, she sent me a card. She was 9 years old at the time. And she sent me a card. And in the card, it was sharing her how sorry she was that Ollie had gone, yet how much that she loved him. And she wrote down in this card the letters of his name, O-L-L-I-E, because even though my son was named Oliver, everybody knew him as Ollie. We rarely called him Oliver. And when she wrote the letters O-L-L-I-E, she wrote words next to those letters. And on the word, in the letter O, she put Oliver. The second letter L, she put Oliver's, and then L, love. And then the second letter L, lives, I, in, E, everyone. Oliver's love,
oh,
lives,
wow,
in everyone.
Yeah.
And, you know, from it, again, from the words of children, from the babes of it's so true. And that touched me greatly. It touched me greatly.
Well, listen,
and,
Deb,
and,
we are actually, I don't mean to cut the conversation short. We've had you on for about 20 minutes more than what we were supposed to. So I'm going to let Michael go ahead and throw out the last question, and then we're going to wrap it up with you. And maybe you can join us inside the chat room, because there are a lot of people in there, and I don't want to cut them short. I know they're waiting also to ask you some questions. So, Michael, you got a last question you want to ask, or should we just go to the chat room?
I'm just going to go ahead and make mention that Deb has another book in the plans right now called Good Grief that she's writing, and I'm very excited to go ahead. Is it a follow-up to the All Aboard, Debbie?
Yes, it is. And Good Grief, you know, as the title suggests, it's really about the good that can come out of grief. You know, funny, humorous, transformation, for me, changed my life completely. So... you know, yes, it's good grief. You know, I live with grief every day, and yet it's all good.
I love that.
It's all good.
Well, Debbie, thank you so much for taking the time to join us, everyone. This is the one and only author, wonderful, wonderful person, Debbie Tibbles, the author of All Aboard, How Ollie Tibbles Became a Train. And don't forget, that information is inside the chat room, as well as just Google it. You can also find it on Amazon. So I don't want anybody to leave the chat room, because Deb's going to come over to the chat room, and I know you guys have some questions, because I can see that they've been asking questions on there. So, Deb, thank you so much for joining us on the air, and I'm sure Michael and I will have you back when that next book comes out.
Well, thank you, Victoria. It's been a pleasure to talk to you, and thank you so much for having me, and I look forward to sharing with people in the chat rooms very, very shortly. Thank you so much.
Thank
and
you
God
so much,
you.
Deb. I absolutely
thank
adore you,
Michael,
and I honor your spirit.
Oh, thank you, darling. It's wonderful to know you, and thanks for having me. I'll talk to you both soon.
Okay,
you got it,
thank
honey.
You.
Take care.
And again, everyone, that was Deb, author, who was joining us. All Aboard is the name of her book. And just a fantastic story. And, Michael, you know, it's interesting because when she was telling the story, of course, my favorite part was about when she was at the Make-A-Wish Foundation, the event, and just the sort of magicalness of that happening on stage with, you know, them pulling the drapes down, and she gets a chance to see the train and her son's name is on there. That in itself is definitely something that I would consider that sounds like a Hollywood moment for a movie.
Oh, it messed me up sitting on my sofa. I couldn't imagine what would happen if I was actually at the event witnessing it. You know, that is just – because usually trains are named after towns or places. They're not usually named after people. So that alone is fantastic. And for the event to be at Union Square where he had his Make-A-Wish fulfilled. The beautiful thing I love about Debbie is she points out also the coincidences that lead you into living a happier, more informed life out of something so very tragic. I mean, to actually have that mindset is truly a gift, Vic. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah. I mean, definitely, for sure. And, of course, I was kind of busy and didn't get a chance to read the whole book, but just the part of the book that I was reading, Chapter 15, that you kind of told me to read before we got on the air tonight. It's one of those books that you definitely can't put it down. And that's what I mentioned earlier. You know, although this book is certainly, you know, it has a sad end, but at the same time, it's one of those endings that you can read this book and you can take so many life lessons from the story, as well as from Deb, and also more importantly, and you talked about this as she did too, from her other two kids, because, you know, like you said, Michael, when one person in the family has cancer, the entire family has it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's the same like that with everything. When Steve was first diagnosed with MS, the entire family had it, you know, everything.
Yeah.
Like we have to acknowledge it, and that's what she did so eloquently, is to acknowledge the cancer that Ollie had and deal with it the best she knew how to. Just a fantastic woman. I'm so happy she found the time to join us tonight.
Well, I'm glad that she did, too. Now, of course, I'm definitely looking forward to her second book, so I'm sure, without a doubt, you always connect with her, and she's more than welcome to come on. But that's very cool that she's hanging out in the chat room now and taking
great.
Some of the questions. But in any event, Michael and I are working on a lot of shows this Christmas, because I haven't had a lot of small businesses and a lot of nonprofits on, because we've been doing a lot, Michael, with a lot of entertainment shows for the past month and a half. But we've got a nice lineup for you coming. Basically, I would say after Thanksgiving all the way up until Christmas, where we have a lot of different businesses. One, Michael, that you talked about that I'm super excited about, of course it has to do with food and baked goods, is this place out of Delaware, is it Newark, this bakery that's actually going to be on iFood TV as well? iFood TV.
7 minutes away from my house, never knew about it, actually. Desserts by Dana, he's an award-winning pastry chef and has a little shop in Newark, Delaware that's making international waves, especially on the Food Network. So very excited to be contacting him. He can go on DessertsByDana.com and actually take a look at some of his works. He's got some great Thanksgiving pies available, too, for a very reasonable price. But, yeah, I'm looking very far. I had no idea he was in my backyard.
Isn't that amazing when you find something out like that and you're thinking, what in the world? How is it that I didn't know about this earlier?
Absolutely. And please, everybody out there listening, don't go ahead and stop sending me your suggestions. Go ahead and email either Victoria or I, or send it to our show email at homewithvictoria@yahoo.com. And that's how I heard about this guy, through a listener from one of the shows. So I'm very happy to have him on.
That's wonderful. And plus, Gina, one of our faithful fans and listeners, she sent us some information, so I know you and I are going to be working on that business that she talked about to get them on the show as well. So literally, just to let you guys know, Michael and I are very much, you know, if you've got a topic or to have a guest or someone on, we really are the type of people, and I'm really the type of journalist that I mean that when I say it. So if you've got something interesting and if, you know, we have the time to get them on, then, and we generally normally do. It may not be then and there because we book our shows a lot, like a month and a half in advance, but we do a pretty good job of getting them on. And also, even if you've got some crafting information, you know, Simone comes on once a month and she does crafts, and Tam comes on and she does fashion, and Jewel comes on with all of her home decor. So you can also email them if you've got a topic that you think that they would be interested in, too. Well, Michael, in any event, you know, I've got this big event tomorrow on Capitol Hill in D.C. I get to host the Tiger Lily Health Day for Breast Cancer in Capitol Hill, so I'm looking forward to that. And I will report back. It's tomorrow from 5 until 8, so I will let everyone know how it goes for me.
Absolutely, and have a good seminar at the college the day after.
Oh, yes, that's right. Michael is great because everyone, he kind of helps me keep up with my schedule as well. So on Thursday at 10 o'clock, I'll be speaking at Prince George's Community College in Prince George's, Maryland. The students there are having a career day, and they have it every single year. Mona Rock, who I used to work with at WMAR-TV, she now is a I think she works in the public relations, and she also teaches some classes there. So she asked me to come and talk about sort of the new age of social media and talk about At Home with Victoria, and just to give her students a little bit of information on, you know, what they need in today's world if they plan on going into journalism. So I'm looking forward to that, and I'll definitely report back about that as well.
Cool beans. And you have a great time and get some rest. You're going to be a very busy lady.
Yes, I will. Okay, and everybody, I'm going to switch over to Facebook, so I think you guys are still in the chat room. I'll keep the chat room open until 9 o'clock, and then we'll switch the conversation over to Facebook. Michael, as always, you are a superstar. We love the guests that you bring us on At Home with Victoria, and keep them coming. Deb was wonderful.
Deb was wonderful, and thanks a lot. And then I want to go ahead and say hi to everybody in the chat room. Brian Lund, thank you for joining us. Jennifer Day, Kelly 21, guests 5804, 6898, 7328, Lisa Renee Brown. Heidi, nice to see you finally. Mari did a great job in chat. And I love you, News Lady. Have a very good time tomorrow.
All right. Thank you so much, love. I'll talk to you soon.
Got it. You be good.
Okay, I will. And everyone, that was entertainment co-host, the one and only Michael Kaye. Don't forget, if you've got any ideas or anything, you can always email Michael on Facebook or at homewithvictoria at yahoo.com, and he'll take care of any suggestions or information that you have. Again, I do want to thank you so much for taking the time to listen to the show tonight. And again, one more time, just to let you know, Deb Tibbles was who we were talking to tonight on the show. And the name of Deb's book is All Aboard, How Ollie Tibbles Became a Train. All you've got to do is Google her, or I know you can also find the book on Amazon, as Michael sent me a copy on Amazon. And it was about $15 and something, and it's in a paperback. So, and also, you'll get a chance to see some wonderful pictures of Ollie, and also a beautiful picture of Ollie and Deb and the train itself, and a little picture, I think, that Ollie drew before he actually did pass away. So thank you so much for taking the time to listen to the show. I am back on the air again next week, but you can also, again, just follow me on Facebook. God bless, and have a very good night.